Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The left side of my body, my thighs, arms and eyes are all quivering again and again. I am having heart palpitations due to fear. All this indicates undesirable happenings. Purport: material existence is full of undesirables. Things we do not want are forced upon us by some superior energy, and we do not see that these undesirables are under the grip of the three modes of material nature. When a man's eyes, arms, and thighs all quiver constantly, one must know that something is going to happen which is undesirable. These undesirables are compared to fire in a forest. No one goes to the forest to set fires, but fires automatically take place in the forest, creating inconceivable calamities for the living beings of the forest. Such a fire cannot be extinguished by any human efforts. The fire can be extinguished only by the mercy of the Lord, who sends clouds to pour water on the forest. Similarly, undesirable happenings in life cannot be checked by any number of plans. Such miseries can be removed only by the mercy of the Lord, who sends His bona fide representatives to enlighten human beings and thus save them from all calamities. Srila Prabhupada ki. So an interesting verse. This is this section where Arjun has been away for some time, and Yudhishthira Maharaj is now wondering where he is. And during this period when they're waiting for Arjun to come, Yudhishthira Maharaj is observing all these signs, all these omens. There are many more to come in the next few verses, but in the last verse and this verse, we get a little intro to these omens. And they're interesting. The left side of the body, thighs, arms, eyes are all quivering. So this is an interesting science, which is typically dismissed today as being superstition or Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki, as being something superstitious or maybe quaint or maybe even backward. does not stand up to scientific rigor. But nevertheless, these are the subtle indicators that actually exist in the world. And for someone who hasn't been, you can say, desensitized by the modern, highly logical, highly explicit way of doing everything. For them, they may still have a little sense of these things, because these are subtle effects, and they are perceived in our subtle body and then manifested in the gross body. So everyone still has a subtle body, even though we like to try to reduce everything down to chemicals. If you saw that video by Radha Govinda Prabhu, just a bunch of chemicals, I think it makes it clear, doesn't it, that just a bunch of chemicals can hardly explain everything that's observed. There is so much just in our psyche that manifests that you cannot really attribute to a bunch of chemical reactions. There's something more going on. And that's not even on the platform of the soul. That's simply on the platform of the subtle body. On the platform of the soul, there's another dimension of interaction and connection that's possible. That's a whole different realm to be connected in. So this subtle science is, as far as possible, people try to reduce it down to a physical set of parameters. So when people have mental health issues, pretty much the only treatment that's given, I mean, there is some therapy given as well, psychotherapy and other things like that. But largely they rely on chemicals to effectively switch off certain parts of the brain, suppress certain parts which are causing undue agitation. So undoubtedly our body is a whole complex machine. The subtle aspects, the mind, intelligence, ego, they very much do interact with the gross body. And there are definitely chemical effects. But to say that that is the only effect may not be complete. That shows an incomplete model of the whole human body and the whole human experience. So that is one aspect of it. And here, as you see, this subtle science of being able to perceive changes in the subtle atmosphere, they can then manifest in the body. So some of these details are given in different places, but in all honesty, most people today don't really have a clear understanding of these. There is Samudra Shastra, there are some other works where information is given about these sciences, how to perceive details based upon a person's physical form. Actually, it's said that a person's features, every aspect of them, the moles, the location of any moles they have, any imperfections, any details, blemishes, all of that indicates something about previous lives and the subtle character of the person. So here you have this interesting idea of the left side of the body quivering. So thighs, arms, eyes. And so for a man, when the left side of the body quivers in this manner, especially the eyelids, that is considered a sign of something inauspicious. For ladies, it's the right side, according to the tradition. And that's interesting. Previously, people would be sensitive to these things. They wouldn't try to look for some cure for it. They wouldn't wonder what medicine they need to take in order to stop the trembling. They would accept that if it comes in this manner, briefly and in a period where you know it's not a long-term disease, there is something being indicated. And that's interesting. When there aren't too many references to this, and only Prabhupada mentions it in the purport here. But Sita Devi also experienced this when Lord Ram made this alliance with Sugriva. Both Vali and Sita experienced a trembling in the left side of the body. That was auspicious for Sita. For a lady, the left side trembling is an indicator of auspiciousness. And for Vali, it was inauspicious, because he was about to encounter some problems. So that is one place where I found that this is referred to. That the science of quivering, twitches, little indicators. Now in the next few verses, there are so many more indicators that are going to be given. How animals crossing in front of you, auspicious animals, inauspicious animals, different noises, the color of the sky, the clouds, all of these portend. They predict something that's about to happen. You can normally, in the Bhagavatam, whenever there's an appearance of the Lord or the appearance of a great demon, there are normally a whole range of symptoms described. You know, the sky darkens, jackals start crying when a demon's about to appear. And conversely, for the Lord's appearance, all auspicious depictions are given. All things work harmoniously. Things are auspicious. There are pleasant sounds. There are auspicious birds making chirping noises rather than crows and jackals braying. There are all these details given, and you'll come across them many times in the Bhagavatam. So people tend to dismiss this, but really it's part of a psychology of deriding something that you don't understand. There's so much that people don't understand. So a convenient way to do it, just in order to maintain their own status, is to dismiss it. So if we don't understand something, and it's too complex for us to bother to understand it, because it may mean we have to alter our view of the world, easier just to ridicule it and to dismiss it. So this has been done over the years, especially with Vedic culture, that individuals have tried to ridicule and dismiss Vedic culture. Simply because if they actually bothered to understand what it is and actually bothered to understand the purport of it, the consequences for their behaviors are quite substantial. So people don't want to change their behaviors. They don't want to change their sinful habits, their sinful lifestyles. So they therefore maintain a type of aversion to anything that encourages them to do that. So much propaganda has gone out from different religious groups, from political groups, from various propagators of their own particular angle on things. So that's something we can be aware of. We don't need to join the club of let's dismiss something we don't understand. Let's try to understand. When someone makes a case against something from a platform of ignorance, that's not particularly admirable. People who know nothing shouldn't say anything. Although that's very unfashionable today. Today's modus operandi, to use a term which Niskanchena likes to use sometimes, today's modus operandi is that whatever your qualification, you still have a right to speak. You still have a right to broadcast your incorrect, incompetent opinions, and everyone must respectfully listen to them. A sage is speaking. That's the modern way of doing things. But it's not the most progressive way of doing things. Because if you listen to persons who are not advanced, you don't make advancement. So our culture, actually any civilized culture, is a culture where the most advanced persons are the ones who others are listening to. That's the culture. So you have leaders who are the most qualified leaders, the most exemplary in their character, the best behaved, the best qualities. You have instructors in society who actually know the subject that they're talking about and have no other agendas. One of the great things about the Goswamis is that through their lifestyle, they demonstrated that they had absolutely no interest in the material world. No interest whatsoever in any of the comforts, opulences, enticements, anything that was available in the material world. So then when they spoke about the spiritual world and they glorified the abode of Lord Krishna and Srimati Radharani, then sane persons could actually look at that, put the two things together, and understand that here is a person who has nothing to gain by propagating some philosophy. So many religious practitioners propagate some amazing sounding philosophy, and the end goal of it is some money. The end goal of it is that my name, fame, distinction should increase so that people will give me money. And then not just money, we've seen how much misbehavior also takes place. Then it's money, lust, and all these other things can also happen with some practitioners. And I'm sure everyone knows several gurus, bogus yogis, etc., who have conducted themselves in this manner. So that is always a problem. So to be free from ignorance is a good thing. So we should be a little modest about actually what we say and what we portray as being facts. And as I was saying, it can be unpalatable when someone dismisses something and they don't actually know what they're saying. It's okay to dismiss something as part of a discussion or an argument where you present robust arguments yourself, counter-arguments perhaps. That's perfectly valid. And that's a system of a healthy debate. But a situation where we simply dismiss without actually having anything positive to contribute ourselves, that's not very sensible. So these things are there, and for us, we don't we're not too preoccupied with them. We are introduced to these concepts within the scriptures, but those introductions aren't really developed. So from that, we can understand that Prabhupada's intention for us is to be aware of these things, to be aware that Vedic culture is a vast organism, if you like. It has so many aspects, multiple components, and there is only really a small portion of it that we are able to follow and practice. But we should be aware of these things, and we should know that things happened in a more subtle and more advanced way, perhaps in the past. So these are all the omens, and if someone knows the omens, they can be alert. They can be careful about how they conduct themselves. Now, Prabhupada in this purport speaks and he links these omens to the situation in the material world, which is largely undesirable. He says, one must know that something is going to happen which is undesirable. These undesirables are compared to fire in the forest. No one wants the fire in the forest, unless it's some arson type of situation. The fire in the forest happens automatically. And the description is often given of bamboo sticks, dry bamboos. When they rub against each other, the wind is technically the agitator. They rub against each other and they burst into flames. Now, none of them really were responsible for the fire. It just arises because of a combination, ultimately, of the modes, as it's referred to here. So the modes govern all the different influences that are working. The modes govern the demigods, enact the influence of the modes for us. And so the wind, fire, all of these things are superintended by different personalities. So what's interesting here is that even if you have the omen, even if you know what's going to happen, you still can't do anything about it. That's interesting. Fires come and there are calamities for the living beings of the forest. Such a fire cannot be extinguished by any human efforts. So now these next few sentences, we need to think about those carefully. Prabhupada says, the fire can be extinguished only by the mercy of the Lord, who sends clouds. And undesirable happenings in life cannot be checked by any number of plans. Now that's really interesting. I wonder if we even apply that statement in our own lives. I wonder if sometimes we create propaganda which is not along those lines. But we have situations in our life that we make plans for to try to correct. Now, who does that? Who doesn't do that? No one, right? Every decision we make in life, every activity we do, it's to achieve some kind of result, if we're conscious. If we're not conscious, we just bumble around doing just doing something whimsically. We're not sure what result will be or what the goal is or if there is even a result. But if we're somewhat focused, we do something to attain a certain result, or we do something as part of a process which may be pleasing to the Lord. So this is quite a difficult one, especially for the materialists or the Karma Mimamsa philosophers who think that anything that happens is by our own efforts. The importance or the presence of the Supreme Lord isn't part of that philosophy. This is simply a philosophy of whatever you do will result in your future and your results. Now, our understanding is quite distinct. But still, this is a very difficult concept to try to explain. You know, the example is given of Prabhupada that when fires take place in the forest, no one can stop the fire. But yet we see so many aeroplanes. When there are forest fires in America, in Australia, they bring these big aeroplanes, which have a big scoop at the front, and they scoop up lots of water, and they throw them on the forest fire. So if that's the argument that a scientist throws at us, scientist or a normal person, what do we say? Anyone have any ideas? It seems a direct contradiction. Yes, you can stop a forest fire, you just need technology. Sparuji. Right. That's interesting. Prabhuji is saying that in Australia, when large fires took place recently, there were lots of planes throwing water, but that didn't stop the fire. It was only when the clouds finally came and it rained that it stopped. Yes, that's fair enough. What about other things that we do? I mean, Prabhupada, it's quite an all-encompassing statement. Similarly, undesirable happenings in life cannot be checked by any number of plans. I mean, that's the direct opposite of what people are doing. Now let's take an undesirable recent happening, this virus. That's an undesirable recent happening. But are we saying that people are not making any plans? No, the entire world is making plans on a government level, on a on a pan-government level. You've got the World Health Organization doing their thing. You've got countries doing their things. You've got different societies doing their thing. You've got Bhaktivedanta Mana with its own elaborate policy, multi-slideshow presentation on what to do, what plan to make to deal with this difficulty. So how do we go forward with this statement? Such undesirable happenings in life cannot be checked by any number of plans. It seems that we're doing it. So do we not have faith in this statement? Or have we misunderstood the statement? What is it? Prahajan Prabhu.
Okay, once there was a fire on the altar here, and it just, you know, nobody was expecting it, but it was actually a radiator near a curtain that just caught fire. Now, the interesting aspect, that's on the altar. The Lord's protected. But no, what happened? Kripa Maya was there, and he was the one who had presence of mind to know what to do. So sometimes there are circumstances that happen on the Lord's altar and you can't prevent them. But the action of a devotee can. You know, he was very quick off the mark. He got in there. I don't think he was altar clean, but he just did the business. And Kripa Maya went straight there into action, and it really it showed that so many things, so-called auspicious, inauspicious, but in every way, the devotee has to sometimes make a decision out of spontaneity or super soul or whatever it is. It still involves this mercy of the Lord to know what to do at the time. And, you know, so
okay.
That's an example.
So it seems like there are actions that we may need to do, even if the Lord's mercy is the ultimate feature. Yeah. Antaranga Prabhu, and then Lior.
Hare Krishna, basically the same point as Prahajan Prabhu mentioned, but you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Mata Smritin Gyanam, so Krishna, he can give you that gyan, that knowledge to prevent. He can withdraw that knowledge, so he can let the catastrophe just take place, or he can give the knowledge, the intelligence to people to, okay, now is the time to stop. So in this specific pastime, it could be in a form of a rain, also could be in a form of, okay, I'll give intelligence to people to stop it. So that could be also a point.
Right, so that's interesting, but doesn't that contradict this? Because when people are making many plans in this world, they are all using intelligence given by the Lord. Prabhupada often said that it's not that in the West or in any part of the world people are unintelligent. Their intelligence is stolen by illusion, that's a fact, we know that. That's from the Gita. But Prabhupada didn't say that. He said that people are intelligent, but their intelligence is misused. It's misused for sense gratification, for increasing material situations rather than for spiritual development. So intelligence is there. And any plan that anyone makes is also based on intelligence. But here the idea seems to be that plans that we make to counteract or correct undesirable things in this world are, in Prabhupada's own words, cannot be checked. The plans that we make cannot check any undesirable happenings. All those plans are based on intelligence. So what type of plans are valid? Are any plans valid? Plans for Krishna? Okay. Sorry, can we just do Lear and then Jagat Priya Mataji?
I think the best example is Arjuna and Krishna on the battlefield, because Krishna actually had to provoke Arjuna. You know, he had to make him angry and had to. You know, at one point, he was reminding him, "Don't forget what they did to you. Don't forget what they did to Draupadi." Mm. And that, so he wanted Arjuna to fight. Arjuna, you know, he did the best that he could according to his nature. But the results weren't up to him. So he did the best that he could understand, and Krishna actually wanted him to do the best that he could do. Hmm. But the result, the victory was up to Krishna. He was behind the whole thing. So the point is that you have to, as far as you know, I understand it, and the message of the Gita is that you have an ability, you have a nature, you have a body, and you should utilize it in the best way that you can, doing your duty, but you're not actually doing it. Hmm. Krishna is behind it, and he's in charge of the results, and you can have a plan, but ultimately Krishna is sanctioning that or not sanctioning that. That's all up to him. But you have to do your part of it.
Well, that's the question, isn't it? See, Krishna sanctioning is a universal principle, whether you're a materialist or whether you're a non-materialist. Now, for a materialist, Krishna's sanctioning power is there, but that sanction comes from the external energy. So for a materialist, it's the external energy that acts as the, how can you say, the person who gives the direct connection. For a devotee, it will be Krishna. The more devoted we are, the closer we are to Krishna. It's Krishna's internal energy that acts. So that's interesting, but I don't know if it completely addresses the issue. Jagat Priya Mataji? Yeah.
Because you were speaking about the plans, which plans we are making. So my thought was more like, so we are not making plans to go against it or to diminish it or whatever, but we are accepting the situation and planning how to go about it now. So yeah. Based on religious principles, on morality, based on how to please Krishna with this, you know. So I think these type of plans.
That's interesting. So our plans are not meant to try to change the ultimate situation, but they're there to allow us just how to move forward within the situation. That's a very nice way to look at it. It's very interesting. Because ultimately we're all doing things. So we can't act with ignorance, as I was discussing. We can't ignore certain situations that exist. Arun Prabhu, you want to give him the mic? Did you have your hand up? No? Okay, sorry. And then Cyrus.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. So I was just listening to a class on Samundra Manthan, the churning of the milk ocean. So it says that both the Daityas and the Devas, both of them were at the same place, doing the same time, the churning at the same time, putting similar efforts, but the Devatas actually got the result. And it further explained that when the nectar actually came out, Dhanvantri came out with the nectar, and he was actually the Supreme Lord himself, acting as Dhanvantri. So Daityas came and they kind of pulled the nectar away from him. But when the same Lord came as Mohini, they themselves gave the nectar back to Mohini, you know. So we can do all the endeavors, all the plans, but ultimately we have to depend on Krishna, you know.
Yes. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. So that is a principle. That's a fair enough principle, that the result is ultimately supplied by Krishna. But here the encouragement or the line of argument is, there's no point making the attempt because it is all doomed to fail. So we're just trying to home in on this aspect. Cyrus and then Srinivas Prabhu.
So Prabhu, so maybe from my own understanding is that we can clarify what intelligence is, and maybe there are two types. Then you have, you might have the material intelligence and the spiritual intelligence. Mm. So the material intelligence would be a kami who's acting without consciousness, but he can be very intelligent nevertheless, and he can build, you know, so much technology and so wonderful things. But it's all on the material platform, and therefore it's temporary, and it has no basis of permanence in there. Mm. So, intelligence is based, and consciousness is, I would say, is rooted in maybe in the super soul. It's got something to do with, you know. So therefore, you'll get the results, and it will be permanent as well. It's a permanent fix, if it's what I mean.
So the result of a devotee's efforts to please Krishna are permanent?
Yeah. So we could see it in two ways, material intelligence and spiritual intelligence. Mm. So when Prabhupada says that intelligence is misused, I was a bit confused by that, to be honest. Because I'm thinking, well, it's not that it's misused. It's in my mind. I'm not saying it's misused. I'm saying that they've got the wrong intelligence. It's material intelligence they've got, and that's how they're supposed to use it, for material things. Spiritual intelligence for something else. That's my take.
Interesting. Thank you. Srinivas Prabhu?
I was reading Prabhupada's letters, and in one of the letters, this is on astrology. So one devotee wrote to Prabhupada that he's preaching in some part of the world. And he wrote to Prabhupada that in this part you're in now, there may be an earthquake happening in the near future. And Prabhupada said, he wrote back, said, we don't go by these astrological signs too much. We carry on with our preaching, and if some catastrophe does happen, we just meditate on the Lord and depend on Him whether He wants to keep us here or take us.
Yes, interesting. So there's just a way to maybe approach this subject. It's that to, first of all, as Cyrus Prabhu was indicating, it's to do with what is the lasting goal, and what is a temporary effect. So. We know that things that last are those things that are connected to Krishna. It's gone off. Yeah, just maybe up a little. Well, it's up to you. Can you hear it? Okay, that's good. That's good. So those aspects of our life that we endeavor for, which have a permanent effect, a permanent result, those aspects are clearly worth endeavoring for. Something that lasts, something that's everlasting. And that is obviously the devotional service that we do. Now for materialists, sadly the situation is that whatever they do, it is a failure. It may seem harsh in one sense, because at best the result that is obtained is valid for this life only. This life maximum. Now, if you do some amazing, if you have some amazing achievement, you might discover something, you might make some magical product, you might build a magnificent construction, you might set up a nice society. The effect of that is all limited to this one life. So many people make plans, actually everyone makes plans. It's just that the preference of the devotees is to make plans for those things that are eternal, as opposed to those things that are temporary. And so it's about weighting. What level or what proportion of effort do we allocate to each? Each of us has to allocate some effort even to temporary things. We have to do that just to survive, unless we're a completely pure devotee. We have to make some endeavor to find food, to do this, to do that, to maintain the body. Requires some effort for the temporary. Now the only decision for a devotee is what proportion of my effort do I put into temporary results and what proportion to permanent results. So for a devotee, obviously that weighting is skewed more towards the permanent. So it doesn't mean quite that we should stop all plans. We should ignore situations when they come. We should just bumble around ignoring the realities on the ground. It doesn't mean we should do that. It just means that the level of our engrossment or involvement, the level to which we are surrendered to that, should be minimized as much as possible. It's about dealing with the situation so that we can move forward spiritually without trying to make undue efforts to counteract the situation. And that's Prabhupada's point, that counteracting a situation will ultimately fail. Just as Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said to Prabhupada in the first meeting, that no point waiting for a change of Indian politics. That's not our goal. That may happen, that may not happen. Obviously, if it happens for the better, that's helpful. But that's not our goal. So we don't hold back waiting for that to happen. So we're not going to stop devotion simply because there is a virus. We're going to carry on with devotion, and we're going to try to encourage all the devotees outside to increase their devotion. And then we're going to help them and facilitate them to do that through various measures and techniques and methods that are put in place. The goal is to continue to increase devotion. And that may involve some quantity of dealing with the impermanent, making some plans. So it's just a question of getting the balance right so that our plans to change the situation don't start to override our conquest, our progress of devotion. That's the real conquest. Not to build a magnificent situation in this world. So, it's a very interesting verse, and we have to think about these things, because propaganda outside very much is quite diametrically opposite to this. People's faith is being increasingly increased in products of science. We just have to have our eyes open to see this. This virus is going to be stopped by rigid measures, by antibody tests, by controlling the situation, by social distancing, by the supply of PPE equipment, masks, all produced by technology. If you're sensible, you should place your faith in technology, not in God. So after all, God didn't stop this disease. Right, that's the propaganda. That's a very strong undertone of propaganda that many people directly propagate, but then many others almost accidentally subscribe to, because it's very convincing. They see it's all the efforts that are preventing the disease, not your prayers. So that makes life very difficult. Of course, persons like that are very much situated in the action, that sort of karma mimamsa, but without even that understanding of what that means, the understanding of consequences. Just my actions alone, what I do here, rigidly, right now, is the only thing that matters. But the fact is that diseases like this are available to everyone. Disease, as a concept, is available to everyone. Just now we have a name for it. We have an identification, we have tests. But how many conditions go undiagnosed? How many diseases are there that people haven't got a clue how they work? Has the concept of disease itself ever decreased in human life? No, the concept is there, the concept is alive, and by various metrics, by various robust statistics, you can see that diseases and the variety of disease appears to be increasing, not decreasing. Mental health issues appear to be a huge portion now of national health resources. They use a lot of national health resources. So many other diseases have just gone up and gone up and gone up. I don't need to tell you that. You can look at the statistics. Problems are increasing. So the concept of disease has not decreased. So we sometimes have to do things that just deal with a situation. If you're sick, you take the appropriate medicine. But don't think for a moment that excessive and extensive plans to create newer and newer medicines will solve the concept of disease. That is our point as devotees. You will never deal with the fact that everyone will get diseased at some point or other. That is the fact that you cannot escape. At least so far, to use the scientists' own propaganda, there is no evidence that that's the case. There is no evidence so far that anyone has ever been freed completely from disease. So how can you claim that's the case? You have no evidence to support it. So this is, we need to be very increasingly more aware, as I was discussing with someone the other day, we have to be increasingly aware of how to present our philosophy given the rise of counter-philosophy that is happening right now. It often makes our preaching more difficult now. But we have to just find the right methods which are based on solid understanding. At the end of it, each person is different and each person has a body, mind, intelligence based upon their karma. And everyone suffers to a greater or lesser extent based on that karma. So a person in this life doesn't try to override that karma too much. They deal with it, they try to understand it, the different components of it, and they try to, within that, within what's been offered to them in this body, they try to offer service to Krishna within their capacity. So every person, every devotee tries to do that. They're not worried about what's happening. They're not worried about the body. They're not worried about the disease. They're not ultimately worried. Now, I was also asked to speak about Srivas Pandit. And it's very interesting. There are many aspects of Srivas Thakur's behavior that are very exemplary in this regard. Yesterday was the disappearance of Srivas Thakur. So we know Srivas Pandit is a member of the Panchatattva. Panchatattva picture behind me here. And he is the manifestation of the marginal potency of the Lord. He's the Shakti. Not the Shakti, he is the marginal potency, the Jiva. The only member of the Panchatattva who are kind of Jiva category. The others are all Vishnu Tattva and internal potency, Gadadhar Pandit. So he plays the role of a perfect ideal devotee, Srivas Thakur. And Srivas Thakur, there's many nice pastimes with him. Obviously, we know that many wonderful kirtans took place in the house of Srivas Thakur behind closed doors. Very secret. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu having these wonderful, intense kirtans in private, in privacy, so that others wouldn't mock and misunderstand. And these took place in Srivas's house. So now just see the faith, the level of faith and the level of complete dependence on the Lord that Srivas has and complete lack of any effort in material areas. So once Lord Chaitanya said to Srivas Thakur, Srivas, how is it? You've got a large family here, but I never see you doing any work. How are you maintaining all this family? And Srivas's answer was cryptic as usual. His answer was, clap three times. Mahaprabhu said, What's this clapping? And he said, well, basically, if I clap three times, and whatever I want doesn't appear, then I will simply fast. And then I will tie a water pot around my neck and jump in the Ganges and end my life. He said, I don't need to worry about anything. The Supreme Lord supplies everything. That is my faith in the Supreme Lord. So now here you have a completely extreme situation. There's no question of managing your life, keeping a balance between your material life and your spiritual life, running on two tracks, all our analogies. One should endeavor only for the maintenance of the body. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. One should only endeavor for self-preservation. Here is an actual example of a completely transcendental individual who dismisses all of that even. He only relies on the Lord. And that's very interesting. Lord Chaitanya was so pleased by that attitude that he said to him, even if the goddess of fortune has to go begging, your house will never be short of anything. Anything that you require will always be supplied to you. And that is the potency of the Lord. So the Lord, when he's pleased with the devotee, he will actually deal with all the issues or difficulties that that devotee has. Most devotees don't have sufficient faith that the Lord will do this for me. And most devotees may not be sufficient in their practice also that they can claim that. But if that's an aspiration that we actually know is true, it is a fact that if we are moving forward in devotional service, that the Lord will protect us. And if we're prepared to accept austerities along the way, but still never give up this idea that Krishna is my supplier and maintainer, then we will actually one day be in that situation, that we have complete dependence on the Lord. And the Lord takes care of us as a matter of pleasure. He does it out of pleasure. So if we just take example from Srivas Thakur, that's an actual way to put this verse into practice. How to actually have no dependence on the material world, but to actually only accept Krishna as my maintainer. So Srivas Thakur also once demonstrated this special consciousness that while the kirtan was going on, his son passed away. And then everyone started crying. All the ladies were crying. And Srivas was telling them, be quiet, be quiet. Don't make noise. Don't disturb the performance of the kirtan. And the kirtan was going on in the room next door. And after some time, Mahaprabhu, he stopped. And he said, I don't feel something's right. Something has happened. What's going on? Go find Srivas. Find out what's happening. And they asked Srivas, and he said, no, carry on. We don't want any disturbance. And then someone said, well, his child has passed away. His son has passed away. Mahaprabhu said, why didn't you tell me? Srivas is thinking, I don't want to disturb your kirtan under any circumstances. Then Mahaprabhu had a whole interaction. The boy came, brought him back to life. Had a conversation with him. Then he left. The boy left again because he didn't want to hang around. This is Mahaprabhu's mood. Mahaprabhu's mood is that I will take care of my devotee. I will take care of the physical situation of my devotee and of the devotee's dependence. And the devotee's mood is, I don't want my physical needs to impact the Lord or his service in any way whatsoever. I will make no effort to maintain myself, to make arrangements for my material needs, which includes the needs of my extended material needs, which is the needs of others dependent on us. So that's a special consciousness. It is perhaps the only way to actually make sense of this kind of verse. That when someone is so completely connected to the Lord, that they have no other interest, no other concern, really, in an ultimate sense. They simply have the full understanding and faith that Krishna will take care of all aspects of my needs. That is a very sublime consciousness and very peaceful. This material world is full of fear. When you surrender to Krishna, there is no fear. And so devotees are always trying to keep Krishna in the center. And they also pray for intelligence. That when situations arise and Krishna wants me to do something, I will pray that I have the intelligence to do it. So I'll stop there. And if anyone has any questions, comments.
There's just one verse that sums it up.
Okay.
And it says there, if we know he's the Lord of sacrifice, the beneficiary of all sacrifices, and that he's the Lord of all the planets, and he's a benefactor and well-wisher of all the living entities, we become free from the pangs of material miseries. So it really actually it's like you're saying, exactly like you're saying, is that trusting in the Lord. Because if we didn't have that knowledge that he's all these things, and it says it gives relief from the pangs of material miseries. And the material miseries is based on our expectation, isn't it?
Yes.
So actually, it's in that way, if we know all these things based on the knowledge that material, it takes us from the pangs of material misery.
Interesting.
It takes it away. Mm. Material misery means our expectation.
Mm.
That's what it says. So as long as we know that, otherwise we're into material miseries if we don't understand that.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. That's a very nice point, that it's our expectations which then, when unfulfilled, give rise to our miseries.
Yeah.
If we have no expectation of a certain thing, we're not upset when it doesn't appear.
Yeah.
Okay, can we pass to Matthew in the corner?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the class. So, I didn't get the point. So you are for vaccination or against vaccination?
Vaccinate or to not vaccinate? That is the question. Well, I didn't really discuss that.
But it's like trying to control the situation of that disease, or is just...
Just wait.
Or we should take it like...
Just
to take care of the body. But I heard that now they are planning to put microchips in the vaccinations and to control us totally. So what about this faith in such situation? Then what do you think about vaccinations?
Well, the world is a complicated place. And for every piece of valid information you find on the internet, you will find some more invalid information. People often do not scrutinize the information they read. There are plenty of tinfoil experts out there. I don't know if you know the term tinfoil. Some people put tinfoil around their heads so that radiation waves do not get in there. That's where the phrase comes from. There are people who out of a desire to not have any involvement with the modern system of things, they sometimes create reasons for keeping away from them, which are not entirely valid. They're not rigorous, they're not tested, they're not valid. So we have to be careful. We have to be careful that when we make a decision, that the information that we have based that decision on is actually correct. I mean, this is not limited to devotees, but there are many people. There are so many different campaigns which different people subscribe to. Recent campaigns, 5G is one of them. Probably vaccination is another one. Probably all forms of medical treatment is another one. Different individuals, sometimes they can be devotees, sometimes non-devotees. They produce propaganda against certain things. And as I mentioned actually in the beginning of the class, when you argue against something from a platform of ignorance, that is not particularly sensible. It's not even particularly useful. If you know the subject in depth and you make an argument against it, that's of value. So before we pronounce, and this is more of a general, it's kind of a general set of factors to consider before we make a decision.
Yeah, unfortunately there are some facts which... more and more come into the light.
Yeah, so my point is a general point, that before we make a decision, and each person's decision may be potentially different on the same subject, that each person makes a decision based upon due consideration, based upon as thorough consideration as possible, based upon their own intelligence, based upon authorized sources of information, based upon experts also. If someone does that, if someone takes into account all of those components, then prays to Krishna to give me intelligence in knowing what to do, because it can be the case that even after you take into consideration all the different available evidences and arguments, you can still be completely bewildered. We need Krishna to actually give us an assistance from within the heart. Jnana Deepena Bhashrita. We need Krishna to give us some help in making the right decision. Now, many people are going to make a different decision. Krishna is going to be more concerned with what did we follow before we made that decision? Did we follow Guru Sadhu Shastra? Did we consider wider effects of our decision? Did we consider its application in different contexts? Krishna is probably more interested in the process that we follow to try to arrive at the best decision possible. If we do the best we can, apply as much rigorous thinking as possible before we come up with a decision, that at least I think, or I hope, Krishna will accept that more favorably than if we randomly, whimsically make some decision and it turns out to be either right or wrong. So whatever the facts are, let's first of all establish that they're facts. And if we do not know anything about the subject, for us to be claiming this or that is not sensible either. So first of all, establish the facts. Let's know what we're talking about. Then whether it's vaccine, whether it's 5G, whether it's vitamin supplements, whether it's whatever it is.
Unfortunately, devotees, they are so much absorbed in philosophy, they do not, listen to that facts, and they do not follow all that. And it's so confusing situation now, because really so many lies in the world. And if you don't follow, if you don't, analyze everything, then you just get lost.
Yes.
So it's very hard to not following to make a good decision. Therefore, I really try to follow, even if it's mundane, maybe material. But I think that it's very important to take care of all the devotees, because if that vaccines and everything will be really bad for our faith, if they can control our bodies somehow and this and that.
You see, well, that needs to be. This is my point. See, that cannot be presented as a valid argument unless it's backed up with facts, and facts based upon proper consideration. So we do not need to be. It shouldn't be portrayed by our behavior should not come across to people outside as these people just reject anything that they don't understand.
We know that usually in vaccines there are included some components.
Let me finish. This is often how people will dismiss members of spiritual organizations. So if what you're saying is based upon a proper scientific study, if it is based upon perhaps you have a scientific background, if you have actually studied how vaccines are made,
Every doctor can say that vaccines include, usually vaccines include basic components, which are, for example, materials from abortions, this and that.
There are many types of vaccines. Certainly it is the case that some of them may include that. Most vaccines are made using eggs. This is how the strains are grown. This is how sometimes vaccines, sometimes medication is produced from animals. Sometimes antibodies are injected into horses.
Yes.
And in the horse body, it is multiplied and extracted. That alone is not sufficient as an argument. That is 1% of a valid argument. It may be 1% of an argument, but it's not the complete argument. So whenever there's a discussion or a decision that's made, we do not need 1% knowledge. So we have to look at trying to increase our knowledge to 100%. So people will always scaremonger. Within every criticism, there is some truth. And within every truth, there is something that's untrue
exactly.
as well. So we have to just be very rigorous before we come up with any conclusions. And different individuals, and we also have to respect this, different individuals will come to different conclusions based upon their different levels of thinking. So that ultimately is only ever going to be between the person and Krishna. So we have to be careful about that. But ultimately we should try to do the best possible. If something is contaminated, highly contaminated, as Prabhupada says, maybe avoid it. But let's make sure. There are so many other hundreds of factors to consider. That the body should be maintained at all costs. That there is a hierarchy of different ingredients, different animals also within the world. There is a hierarchy of species. And a lower species may be used to assist a higher species. Obviously, we have to consider those factors also. Not just one dimension.
So you think that the body should, at any cost, should be saved?
No, not at any cost. We have so many examples in the Bhagavatam of individuals who gave up the body. We have so many examples of individuals who maintain the body.
Yeah, many examples. So which example are you following? That save the body? Or it doesn't matter, we can just leave with the bodies?
You follow the process I gave earlier. You consider the matter deeply. Each situation is different. Each person is different. The available knowledge is different. Krishna's desire is different. There's no one rule. There's no one rule in any aspect of our spiritual life. Each circumstance is unique. Each person is unique. So we have to consider each circumstance very carefully.
That's very interesting.
You can have a completely different response. For one person, the advice for them may be protect your life at all costs. For another person, it might be give up your life. Mother Yashoda, Krishna, Devaki. Vasudeva had to protect Devaki's life at all costs, at the cost of 7 children. Right? All the children, I will deliver them to you personally. Dadichi in the Bhagavatam, happy to give up his life immediately. Completely different results. But what went on behind it? What were the reasons? What was the situation? What was Krishna's desire? So it's a very complex thing. We can never create a blueprint as to what can be done. That is actually one thing that will prevent us becoming a rigid dogma, a society with rigid dogmas. Because the world is fluid. And just when you think you've worked out the formula for how to go about life, Krishna is going to throw a different situation at you, which will make that formula not work at all. Right now it's the virus. It could be some completely different category of catastrophe in a few years' time. It could be something completely different. We can't even conceive what it could be. It could be a natural disaster of a different type. It could be something internal to persons, could be anything. So yeah, life is challenging. But if we just have faith in Krishna, and Krishna is ultimately the source of all intelligence, he knows how to deal with every possible situation. So he will be able to help us move forward.
My question about vaccinations was because I see how devotees really arrange things here, you know, to accept people who will come and to protect each other and so on. So when it will come the moment when we have to take vaccinations, somebody will have to make the decision for all, isn't it?
No, you will make the decision yourself, unless there are laws. And so we when that time comes, let's make sure we're prepared and we actually make the right decision based upon actual facts. That's the best way forward. Okay, thank you. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.